This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Playwright and actor Tommy Taylor was arrested during the G20 summit in Toronto in July 2010, along with his girlfriend Kate and more than 900 other people. He was held for 23 hours and then released without charge. Tommy Taylor has turned the experience into a play produced by Praxis Theatre and the Original Norwegian. It's called You Should Have Stayed Home, and it opened at the Fire Hall Theatre on Wednesday night. Jane Williams went to see the play, and she's joined me in the studio this morning to tell us about it. Hello, Jane.
Hi, Lorraine.
I understand the play started out as a Facebook post.
Yeah, and it was quite the Facebook post. It wasn't two lines. What happened is he got out of the detention center, sort of starting at the end of the story here. He finally got home. He couldn't sleep, despite the fact that he'd been awake all night in detention. And he sat down at his computer and he wrote about what happened in as much detail as he could remember. And it turned into an 11,000-word Facebook post. So by the time he'd finished it, he'd been up for 70 hours. His girlfriend had gone to work and come back, and I think maybe he went through another night entirely. And then the Facebook post went viral. It was translated into seven languages. It ended up in 21 countries. And he found himself at the center of trying to tell the story of what had happened at the G20. And so then following that, the following year, he hooked up with Praxis Theatre and premiered the piece at Toronto's Summerworks in 2011, the Summerworks Festival. And now he's on a national tour.
So is the play very much different from the Facebook post?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you can still read the Facebook post, and so I went and I read it, and of course I went to see the play. The Facebook post, for people who are interested, is titled "How I Got Arrested and Abused at the G20 in Toronto, Canada." So you can find it under that title. The story is basically the same, give or take a few details. But in the play, there's an introduction. He gives personal details about his life. He's like, I'm 32 years old. I'm from Mississauga. I was the valedictorian at my high school. I went to Vancouver Film School and other kind of details like that. And then at the end of the story, he brings the story up to date with information about the call for an inquiry that was ignored by the federal government and the provincial government, and what happened with the one inquiry that did take place. But the rest of the play, and it's a 75-minute production, was basically the telling of the story of what happened when he was in detention.
Well, so it started out as a Facebook post, ended up as a play. Does it actually work as a piece of theater?
I think it does work. I mean, basically it's storytelling, but storytelling is a form of theater. There are some more traditional theatrical elements, but not many. But it worked for me because the story was so interesting and shocking, and of course true and well told.
So where was Tommy Taylor and his girlfriend Kate when they got arrested?
Well, now I don't know the geography of Toronto, but for people who do, they were at Bay Street and King Street when they joined a group of people who were heading away from the fence. They were heading away from the G20 and towards their house because they were trying to get home at this point. And then they stopped in front of Novotel, which is a big hotel on Esplanade. And the workers there were on strike, and there were G20 delegates who were staying there. So the crowd of people that they were in decided to sit down and just have a peaceful protest. And so they sat down in the street, and then they were singing "Give Peace a Chance," waving their arms, "Give Peace a Chance." So, and then what happened is that they were surrounded by riot cops, and they weren't allowed to leave.
So what happened then? Were they taken away?
Yeah, they were taken away. So they were dragged off the street one by one. They were put in cuffs, like plastic handcuffs. They were put into police vans. And then eventually they were put into prisoner transfer buses. And in fact, Tommy Taylor ended up in the same bus as his girlfriend, but the women were put in seats in the front that had cages around them. And then they were taken to some former movie studios in Toronto at Pape and Eastern. And this was a very powerful part of the story, because there's a description of the hangars, and the hangars are this amazingly surreal and eerie place. He says the ceiling is 200 feet up in the air. Anyway, he can't see it. The movie hangars are lined with cages, and in the cages there are people. They're filled with people. They're bleeding, some of them, crying, calling out. There are fluorescent lights about 15 feet off the floor. It's freezing cold. There's chaos among the hundreds of police who are there. And in fact, this is one of the theatrical elements that he uses. The set is a cage. It's made out of pieces of fencing. The cage is 12 feet by 20 feet. And of course, the one on stage doesn't have a front so that we can see through it, and it doesn't have a roof. But it does have a porta potty with no door, which was what was in each of the cages. There's one bench in there that would seat maybe six people. So that's kind of on stage. As you come in, you get to actually be with this cage while people are filing into the theater. And then there's a recorded noises of people kind of in distress, kind of shouting and yelling. And it's quite an effective way when you first come into the theater and see that.
So it's a one-man play, so how does he get across the idea of being crammed in a cage with a bunch of people and actually hundreds of people together in those hangars?
Well, that's an interesting problem, because as you say, it is a one-man show, and he is traveling around with it, and he can't travel around with 40 people. It would make it a much more expensive tour. So what he does is he recruits volunteers in each town to join him in the cage. So there's an email on the website, and you can contact that website. You say you want to be in the cage with him on the stage, and then those people who are selected for that process, then they do a brief rehearsal ahead of time, just before the show, just because they do some, I mean, they kind of move around the stage a little bit. They don't really do any acting per se. They stand there mostly, and they also have plastic cuffs, a good deal looser than the plastic cuffs that everybody had on when they were on that particular night when they were in detention. And there are some scenes where it's very important to have those people on. There's a scene where he talks about how there's no door on the porta potty, and the women, when they want to go to the bathroom, then there's a lot of men around, the guards and the police who are there, and they're looking at them, and they're not looking away. And so the women say, I think they say wall, something like that. I can't remember. And then the women all go in front of the door so that then they get privacy. So that's one kind of scene that they act out. There's another scene where they're all shouting for water because they're in there and they haven't had any water. And at this point, they're detained at the end of the day. So who knows when they had their last glass of water. And they're shouting water, and then all the people who are in the cage shout, water, water.
So do they stay on stage with him throughout the performance?
No, mostly it's just him. And in the cage, he has a couple of things which are obviously were not in the original cage. There's a table that he sits at and a nice office chair and a jug of water, which was obviously not in there. And he has a laptop. And he uses the laptop as a projector to mark chapters, and the chapters have titles. And so part of the original Facebook post when he wrote it was that there were 15 sections and they were all chapters, and he gave them titles. Now, I think that was probably a part that was useful in the Facebook post, because if you're facing 11,000 words of text, you kind of need some markers to know where you're going. For me, that was one of the less successful elements of the piece as a theater piece, because it distracted from the flow of the story. But yeah, so mostly it's just him.
So who was in the cage with him during his actual detention?
Well, there were 39 other men. So just to kind of reiterate again, the cage was 12 feet by 20 feet, and there were 40 people in there, so they couldn't even really lie down. There was a 16-year-old. So there was a lot of efforts to try and get him in contact with his parents somehow, but I don't think they did manage to do that. There was a First Nations guy who was not fazed by it at all. He's just like, yeah, this is what it's like. So I think that was something that was a real eye-opener for Tommy Taylor. There was a confused homeless man, and at some point, when they arrested him, I think he said, what is a G20? So he had no idea. There were three German tourists who were visiting Toronto, and so then there they are, their trip to Canada, they're in a cage in a detention center. There was a guy who went to the keg with his girlfriend. There was a Toronto bus driver who was tackled from behind by police as he was coming off his shift. So there were a lot of different people.
So how did Tommy Taylor eventually get out?
Yeah. So he was moved to a new cage at some point. He was taken out of the first cage. His cuffs were cut off. He was photographed. And then he was told that he had been arrested for breach of the peace, and that if he was arrested again, he would be charged. And so they said, so don't join any more protests during the G20. And so then he was let go. And it was like, at this point, I mean, they were detained late at night, and then they were let go then again late at night. It was pouring rain. And he comes out of the movie hangars, comes out of the gate surrounding the buildings, and then he sees a group of people, and they're standing there, and they have some apples, and they have some water. And so he goes out and he talks to them. But then in his kind of, you know, confused and stressed out state, he thinks, oh, is this a rally? Should I go now? Am I going to get arrested? And then finally he calls his girlfriend and he takes a cab home, and then he sits down at his computer and writes the story.
So what did Tommy Taylor have to say about the police?
Well, it was kind of a mix. It was a massive operation, so there were police from everywhere. There's police from Regina, there's police from Barrie, Ontario. And a lot of them didn't have their name tags on. They weren't identified. But he talks about the different responses that they got from the police. Some of them were laughing at the people in the cages, the people begging for water. Others were trying to help. There's one particular police officer who was trying to help the 16-year-old, and I was in tears, and then actually went over to the women's cage where his girlfriend Kate was, and so he found out about this later, that she was in tears over there talking to them. But I guess the thing that it really came down to in the end was that everybody in there was saying, we don't know what's going on. It's kind of chaotic, but they did it, and they kept doing it because they were following orders, despite the fact that they knew that it was wrong. So in his production and in his Facebook post, he saves his biggest criticism for the people who headed up the security operation, and for the Toronto police chief who followed orders from that security operation, the integrated security unit.
Who do you think Tommy Taylor's trying to reach with this play?
Well, with the play, I think with the Facebook post, if I can start there, I think who he was trying to reach with that was the people who believed the media presentation of black bloc protesters who were burning cars and smashing windows on Yonge Street. Because He felt, and I know many people felt this, that the police just let them do it. And then the police allowed in the media to take to record that, and then made it the message to justify the security budget. And there was really nothing else on the news about the G20. So when he came out, he'd had this horrifying experience, and what he saw was the black block. He didn't see the free speech zone. He didn't see all the wonderful things that he'd seen in Queen's Park. He just saw the black block. So I think when he sat down and wrote the Facebook post, that's who he was trying to reach. I think with the play, it's a little different because it's 3 years later. The G20 is old news. And that what he's doing with the play is he's definitely trying not to preach to the choir. He's emphasizing that he's just a regular guy. He wears in the play the same T-shirt he was wearing on that day, and the T-shirt has Canada and freedom printed on it. And so I think he's saying, I'm just a regular guy who believed that my country was a good place where these kinds of things didn't happen, and look what happened. So I'm not somebody who came into this with an analysis of Canada being a colonial nation, yada, yada, yada. So he wants to share with people his outrage about what happened in Canada and to say, we need accountability for what happened, and we need to be vigilant about our rights.
So it's got a stretch on at the fire hall still, so people can go down and see it?
Yes, it's on until October 5th.
Thanks, Jane. I've been speaking with Red Eye Collective member Jane Williams about the play You Should Have Stayed Home. It's on at the Fire Hall Theater until October 5th. There are performances every night except Monday, with two performances tonight and next Saturday. There's also a Sunday matinee. And on Thursday, October 3rd, there's a post-show discussion panel with Michael Vaughan from the BC Liberties Association and lawyer Greg McMullen and activist Harsha Walia.